Let's run it. It's Hot Sheet. It's World Series week continuing here. Scotty Braun, JJ Cooper, and Ben Badler from Baseball America. Before we start things off, I just thought of this last minute here, JJ. I mean, of course, you get the salary talk and how the Dodgers spend a lot. And the Blue Jays do too, their top five payroll. But I always think of the moments like when you read, and I already know this fact about Will Smith, part of the, what was it, 2016 draft for the Dodgers that was just loaded with talent that they were able to pick up. They're good at other things too, well, besides just spending money.
Especially take a look at where they picked Will Smith and take a look at pretty much everyone in front of him. That's not a draft that a whole lot of teams look back on and are pretty excited about what they picked, but the Dodgers have a reason to, because they do a very good job of identifying talent, improving talent, and either getting that talent to the big leagues for them or a lot of times trading that elsewhere, which I know that people always say with that, well, you know, what does that matter? Well, it matters because they often are also good at identifying what are players who don't fit for them but who have value in a trade, like Michael Busch, obviously being an example of that.
Yeah, that's a great example. So if you think Yamamoto was MVP of game two, which you're probably right, then Will Smith was probably the runner-up. All right, let's hit first move.
Meep, meep.
JJ, active service time for every MLB rookie in 2025. This one also does relate to the World Series. I'll give you the World Series spin as you tell us about what you put together. Trey Savage, game one World Series starter and rookie eligible in 2026. What else did you find?
So we're excited about this. Ethan Holohan is working with us on this. So active service time is kind of a difficult concept. It's not just service time for determines rookie eligibility. If a player is on the injured list, that's service time, but it's not active service time. So with Ethan's help, largely Ethan has calculated how much time on active rosters every player who's rookie eligible spent in 2025, 2024, 2023 as well. The key thing about that being if you are on the active roster 45 days, you're no longer rookie eligible after that. 45 is the limit. So 46 days, you're no longer rookie eligible, even if you didn't hit the innings limit or hit the at-bats limit. And there are players who just edged over that, and there are players who just stay below that. Trey Savage was well below that, but it is kind of crazy that we have a player here who is already had a career accomplishment, a career highlight. He was a game one World Series starter, and he's also a 2026 American League Rookie of the Year favorite because he will be rookie eligible next year.
Yeah, it's you don't see too many players taking that Trey Savage path going from starting the year in low A, which, you know, for a college pitcher, I think part of it was probably him, the Blue Jays, excuse me, wanting to start him in Dunedin, Florida, instead of, I think, Vancouver is their high A affiliate, a little bit nicer weather to start the season. But I do wonder if we're going to start seeing some more guys start rocketing up the system that way, too.
I can't help but think that if you look at this draft and that we just had, and you look ahead to next year, the one that obviously jumps out is the Mariners took Cade Anderson. The Mariners were one of the teams that won the lottery. They weren't terrible last year, but they won the lottery, so they picked three. Cade Anderson, the ace, you know, basically you saw the College World Series last year. I would be stunned if he wasn't put on kind of a timetable that ensured that, hey, he still has some innings left, some juice left, come next September and October. I think you could also say that Jamie Arnold very much with the A's kind of fits that. The A's obviously were improved this year. The A's show with Nick Kurtz that they have no problem moving guys quickly. Jacob Wilson before that. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Jamie Arnold. I think you could throw maybe Liam Doyle, the Cardinals first round pick, depending on how well good the Cardinals do next year. And even, you know, I see Angels, Tyler Bremner. I don't think it'd be shocking at all if we saw if he's fully healthy. He had a little bit of injury issues this year, but Tyler Bremner is another guy who could move really quick. We're seeing these arms, these college arms, especially jump. Chase Burns made an impact in the postseason as well. It wasn't just Trey Savage. Ben, I think that we're going to see more of this going forward.
Yeah, you know, you think back to like the 2024 draft last year. Yeah, we saw Chase Burns reach the big leagues this year. We saw obviously Trey Savage do it. You know, but I think part of it depends on where a team is in terms of where they are as a contender. Obviously, if you have an truly exceptional pitcher like a Paul Skeens, who's going to come up and be the rookie of the year after his draft, and also be, I believe, top three in Cy Young voting. Okay, that's different. But even if there are teams that want to push their players that way, the player still has to go out and then perform, right? So, like, okay, maybe the White Sox don't have any reason to have pushed Hagen Smith this year. But if Hagen Smith had been drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays instead of the White Sox, he's still not pitching in playoff games right now because he went to Double-A and okay year for him, but struggled with his control. I think you look back a couple of years ago in the 2023 draft. Obviously with Skeens and Rhett Lauder going to the big leagues the year after they get drafted. But, the Rockies obviously have no reason to push Chase Dolander, but Hurston Waldrop, who was drafted by the Braves, more toward the back of the first round, they tried to push him really fast. And I guess technically he did get to the big leagues for a couple of starts where he got lit up in the year after he got drafted, but he just wasn't really ready for it. So I think a team's definitely, if you're taking a college, like a college pitcher in the first round, you want to move that guy fast to the big leagues, but still, like, not everybody's ready to make that rocket ship acceleration the way that a guy like Trey Savage did this year.
Great point. It's a little bit of a different example, but it kind of fits with this. We went into last season and the whole question was, okay, there were the Andrew Painter rules that the Phillies were trying to set up Andrew Painter coming off of Tommy John surgery so that he would still have innings left and still be able to make an impact for them in the postseason if they, got there. Well, they got there, but Painter kind of took a step back in his return from TJ and, obviously just wasn't really ready. He was getting hit too hard in AAA to even consider bringing him up to the major league. So, yes, it is something where I think teams are going to absolutely look at this, but at the same time, I don't think it's something, you're right, completely, Ben. Not everyone's going to be able to do this. Even guys who end up being successful starters, it's just going to be something where you're going to have that combo pack where you're able to move really quickly and you fit on a team that actually has something to play for in October. I was just going to add to that, kind of throw it back to Ben. Like, okay, we see this. We saw this a couple years ago with Evan Carter. We saw this considered with Wyatt Langford. We're talking about pitchers here, but how much do you think we might see a little bit more of this on the hitter side now? Because we've obviously also seen, some kind of fast moving position players as well.
Yeah, I think with pitchers, it might be a little bit easier because everybody always has a need for pitching, right? So it's not, and there's no team that's like, oh, well, our rotation is just too good right now. Like, we don't need any help on the pitching side. Whereas with position players, some of it can come down to need. We saw Nick Kurtz do it this year. He forced his way into the big leagues this year. I think we will see some and continue to see more college bats like that really rocket through the major leagues. But I think it's a little bit easier for the pitchers because there's just not as much of that. Okay, let's make sure we find the right position for this guy or have an opening for this guy to play on our team right now.
The one thing I was going to say, JJ, is when you do see a position player suddenly pop up in the postseason, like Chase DeLauder, I think he was hurt, right? Kind of late in the year, if I recall. Okay, because we were bashing it a little bit.
Assuming he was hurt, you're probably okay, because that's unfortunately been the story of his career a lot so far.
Yeah, but we were like, damn, you're just throwing this guy into the fire. And I know he's not the first one. There's been a few others that have debuted like that. I'm just like, generally, if you can get the guy something in the bigs before throwing him in there like that, I just think that's a tough look for a position player to suddenly just be facing postseason big league pitching, which you could make a case is like one step up from MLB because you're getting the best pitching in the league generally.
I mean, I haven't run the numbers this week, but the last week I ran it, it was like the average starter averages 96 miles an hour in the postseason. Like, that's average. Like, 95 is kind of 94, 95 is what you see in the regular season. In the postseason, it amps up another mile an hour to 2 miles an hour. So yes, you make a good point there. Of course, we also have in the World Series, we're seeing Bo Bichette like learn second base on the fly, which I know he's a veteran, but crazy things happen come postseason time. It's something where it truly is all hands on deck.
Yeah, and I know teams are better now at prepping guys, stuff like that, right? You've got the Trajecta machine and other ways tech-wise that you can get players a little bit better prepped, but still, I mean, you're facing the best talent in the world in the majors, then that gets shrunk in the postseason to really the best talent like JJ's talking about. But anyway, good topic. Daniel Espino hopefully joining us next from the Arizona Fall League on BA Hot Sheet.
This episode is brought to you by Square. Your favorite neighborhood spots run on Square. Square is a proud partner of more than 4 million neighborhood businesses around the world. These businesses are what make the neighborhood the neighborhood. You and I are both in Orlando, and I see Square all the time at those awesome farmers markets around town.
And a lot of restaurants in general just have this to where you just, they have the little thing plugged into their phone and you stick your card in it and wham, bam, we're out. It's cool. It's a way for local businesses to make money and make it easy on not only them, but also on me, the consumer, because Lord knows I'm not making or selling anything.
No, and it's a tap or on your phone, you mm-hmm. double click.
You can even insert your chip if you want to, swipe it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's changed the game. You can go to square.com/go/foul to learn more. But before you do, go support your favorite neighborhood spot. You'll be happy that you did. Again, square.com/go/foul to learn more. Square, see you in the neighborhood.
Get after it, FT fam.
The holidays can sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has a host of unique, high-quality, and often handmade gifts, many of which are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. That attention to detail often means products are made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast, like the book of famous Dodgers newspaper clippings ordered on Uncommon Goods that I received as a birthday gift. It was a special present catered to my liking that can't be found anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard baseball fans like me, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners, you'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not only finding the best and most unique gifts for the people you care about, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice and have donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Hey, we're back. Hoping to have Daniel Espino joining us soon in the Cleveland Guardians organization. Quick note here, just because it's fresh news. Craig Albernaz gets hired. He was associate manager with the Cleveland Guardians, BFF with Stephen Vogt. I just thought it was interesting when I started reading and listening to more about this decision and how other Cleveland execs too are being highly considered for, you know, GM spots and coaches for positioning like this. JJ, there's like a true feeling right now in the industry that Cleveland is doing things a lot better than, you know, 25 other orgs, something like that, right? Obviously Milwaukee's up there. The Rays have been up there in the past, but Cleveland is well respected with what they're doing.
I will wear my bias here on the sleeve. Matt Forman, who has been announced as one of the finalists for Colorado, former BA-er, Baseball American, was the best intern we've ever had. I think it's fair to say. Sorry to every other intern we ever had. Sorry, Ben. You know, no offense. I think Ben, didn't you do? Weren't you?
No argument here either. Yeah, you know, no arguments.
Ben's gonna be the GM of the 2038. Expansion something, Utah, Salt Lake City somethings. So yeah, we've got time. But no, great point. Matt's great.
And I do think that this is like you mentioned this. I will say this also to make Stephen Vogt and Craig Albernaz an example of like the Rays kind of served as an incubator that has kind of spread out. Like obviously Andrew Freeman is one of the names that kind of jumps out of that, but Heim Bloom, like there's James Click, Peter Bendix. So like you now have so many raise people kind of all over the game that Albernaz was, I remember he was the manager of one of the best Class A teams we've seen in years, our team of the year, I think it was Bowling Green 2017, I believe it was, where like he was the manager of that. Like he obviously came up through that Rays system and then has gone on to have success elsewhere as well. But this is something it also does kind of point back to the, to the Guardians but also to the Rays as well. And I think the challenge that the Rays face here is when you keep having people who leave for other jobs. We've seen this with the Brewers. To the Brewers' credit, like David Stearns leaves and Matt Arnold gets promoted and they've kind of just rolled right along. That's challenging though. It is hard when you have brain drains to kind of keep it going. The Guardians have done that. I think the Rays have done a solid job of that. The Brewers, I would say obviously the Dodgers are another team that we should 100% mention that have done this, where you have a whole lot of Dodgers officials, ex-Dodgers officials kind of spread all around the game. But you look at the Guardians and you would say like, yeah, they're doing it quite well. They are consistently successful despite the fact that they have a payroll that is often minuscule.
Well, it's perfect intro for Daniel Espino to join us now from the Arizona Fall League. And he is in that great organization, super successful organization lately. Daniel, great to have you on the show. How's Arizona Fall League life going for you right now? The radar gun looks like it's popping.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's nice to be here. It's good to finally be back in competition and, just going out there competing and just having fun.
Daniel, it is something where I think we can all say we're so glad to see you back out on the mound. I remember, that last year before you got hurt, you were truly must-see TV in the minor leagues. I literally remember where I was when you were facing an Orioles lineup where I was like calling friends, like, you have to be watching this. Take us through though, like from there, like where you're okay, I'm not that far away from the big leagues. What have the last couple of years, like what is life in rehab like, injury rehab, where you're just, how do you kind of stay kind of focused, keep your spirits up? How did you kind of go through that journey?
I think that's a good starting point. I mean, I was, that outing was amazing for me. It was special. And obviously I got sidelined just for the injuries and all that. And it was kind of like a recurring thing about, like getting back-to-back surgeries and stuff like that. It's easily just to get away and mentally draining and all that, but just keeping everything in perspective, just knowing that, better days are coming. And also I think like it's surrounded by really good people. Really good people from the organization, my friends, my family. It just helped rehab a little bit better.
Yeah, obviously having the shoulder surgery, it's, there's limitations to what you're able to do as far as your development. But what were some of the things that you've done over the last couple of years, other than, obviously the rehab itself, working with coaches in the organization to try to develop more as a pitcher yourself?
That's one of the hardest thing because you're out from the game. Like, you're not able to get repetitions in and all that. Like, the rehab part of it is pretty much straightforward. The guys in here in Arizona from the organization, they do a really good job of getting you a routine that you can do every single day. So that's kind of like the easy part. The hardest part is whenever you're out of the field of the complex and you have 10 hours to kill and, there's not a lot that you can do. And you're watching baseball and trying to duplicate that, like mentally reps and stuff like that. But still, like, to me, it was kind of hard, obviously, whenever I found out that I had to get another surgery. It was kind of like, okay, like, can I catch a break? And I think like this year has been like a really good year to me, just to get back in the field, get throwing and getting repetitions in and knowing like the stuff that I have is actually pretty good. It gives me a lot of confidence heading to the 2026 season and so on.
As Scott mentioned, the velo's back, you've hit triple digits again, but how are you a different pitcher than you were, basically 3 years ago now? How are you different? Is your delivery the same? Do you feel like the stuff is the same? Or how, what have you learned through this journey? How are you a different pitcher?
When you're in rehab, you try a different type of stuff. You try a little bit of everything just to get back on the field. And that's the most important thing, like if I'm healthy, I can take care of the rest pretty much in the field. But going back to that, I think like my flexibility was one of the biggest things that I worked on this year. being flexible while maintaining stability. But as far as like, I'm the same pitcher, I feel like, you know, I still have that same presence on the mound, which to me is more important than you know, all my stuff. But my first IBP and like whenever I started throwing bands, it was like, okay, like this feels actually pretty good. So just build up from that. And, you know, I'm in the position I am right now and couldn't be more proud of myself and the people around me.
And when you're, you know, when you're off the field, then obviously, you know, being in the gym, working out is such an important part of what you do. What were some of the things maybe you had to change, or was it challenging just maintaining all the work in the gym with the shoulder injury? I mean, obviously it's got to affect the upper body stuff, but even just being able to, you know, do heavy lower body work had to be a challenge given the shoulder injury too, I imagine.
You know, I remember the day of my surgery after I got, like, you know, all the procedure, and I was a little bit under, you know, the numbness and all that. We were eating dinner after the surgery, and I told my the guy Dan Himrick that he was doing my rehab. I was like, okay, I want to work on this, to work on that. So it was like pretty much I already had a plan. And to be honest, like this year, I kind of like gotten away from the gym. I've been focusing more about stability, more movement-based workouts and stuff like that. Because like the years before, I will be in the gym almost every day of the week. And that's something that I have changed. And, you know, it was a lot of thought about it from my end to take that decision, because I was like, am I going to still have the power that I have? Am I going to still be explosive and all that? And just trusting what the medical and like the SNC staff have done with me and worked with me about maintaining that, okay, like I'm on the right path and all that. And it showed that to me worked. So I would say like that's one of like the biggest change that I made in my routine.
So you were fresh off the anesthesia and all that, and you were like, hey, I've got the plan already, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it just shows that you know, my mentality, like pretty much like, okay, like I'm ready to get to work. And that's what it was.
I love that. Wait, one more on my side. I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on the way that Cleveland develops pitching. I know this is the organization that you know, but I'm sure you have friends around that are in other organizations. Why do you think they've been so successful at helping to develop pitchers? You know, some of them are not necessarily the biggest name prospects, right? And then they emerge and they're big deal pitchers, either in the rotation or in the bullpen for them, especially, you know, looking at the last, like, I would say 5 to 7 years where they've had a lot of success on the pitching side.
I would say that it's just a hand-to-hand situation. You know, it has to come from the player and also from the front office and the coaches. I think that they do a really great job on partnering with you and, okay, like this is where you're good at, let's get better at this, and while getting better in other stuff. At least that's what I've test about it and all that. And, you know, like I heard teammates just saying about like, okay, like this is where I'm good, let's excel on that and get better in other stuff. But I would say like that's the most important thing. But also like from our scouting department, how they draft people and how they draft like players that are able to, you know, adjust and are willing to get better every single day. I think once you do that, that's easy to make tweaks and go from there.
And I always like visiting Goodyear when I go out to the spring training or the AFL and all that. But I have to imagine at this point, you are like the resident expert. Like, I mean, the new draftee comes in and they need to know where, you know, where to go, where to eat, what's the best places and all. Do you have that pretty much nailed down at this point, unfortunately? You know, I'm hoping you can have more Akron, you know, Cleveland, you know, things, places like that down the road. But
I think they should change the name of the complex. They should call it my name. But no, just kidding. It's kind of cool, you know, because every year, like I've been able to see three draft class, and every year is kind of like exciting because I remember when I was in that position, you know, And it's kind of cool just to be around them, kind of like show them the Cleveland way, you know. And to me, I feel proud of that. I feel proud every time I step on the complex that I'm a Cleveland Guardians player, and that I try to maximize and show what we're about. And to me, that's, I take really pride in that.
That's really cool. Yeah. I mean, you can mentor and then you get like fresh energy coming through the organization there too. Very cool. Well, this was great. It's great to see you back, Daniel. We're rooting for you. Fun to watch. Keep doing your thing out there in the Arizona Fall League. And we'll talk to you down the road. Okay. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, my guys.
Thank you. All right. That's Daniel Espino on Baseball America Hot Sheet. And we are going to take a quick break and we'll say bye to Ben. Jacob Rutner coming in strong. Hey, if you want to take care of yourself, your body, and everything that goes into health, fitness, and nutrition, Superpower provides Kratz what I would call the pro experience for the everyday person.
100%. Super easy. You get your lab test results back and you can streamline exactly what you're deficient in. You can say, okay, this is what the results told me. I'm going to go ahead and maybe look for that in a supplement, which they provide. I'm going to go ahead and look at that in my daily workouts, which they give so many different ideas of how to make sure your deficiencies become some of your superpowers.
Superpower used to cost $499. Head to superpower.com right now to learn more and lock in the special $199 price while it lasts. After you sign up, they'll ask you how you heard about them and make sure you mention FT. Your biology decoded, your blueprint activated with Superpower. I love that animation. Back to school. All right, let's jump right into it. Jacob, good to see you. Tennessee is picking up the pieces after Tony Vitello leaves and makes a little history, signing on with the San Francisco Giants to be their manager. So what can you tell us about Josh Uihlander?
Well, first of all, let's say this. I don't necessarily think that there are many pieces to pick up for Tennessee because they promoted Josh Uihlander. And that was kind of the purpose of that decision. They promote somebody who is experienced within their program. He's one of the leading architects of what Tennessee's been able to do. I think people forget because of the success that Tennessee's had over the course of the last decade. Tennessee wasn't a great baseball school prior to Tony Vitello's arrival in the summer of 2017. He was able to build it up to this national power, and part of that was Josh Uihlander's recruiting. He's one of the best acquirers of talent in the country. He's an elite hitting coach, and now they basically put somebody in place who is able to continue a lot of that. They have an unbelievable recruiting class in 2026 and 2027. They keep the person in place who's going to be able to maintain those bonds and make sure that Tennessee brings in the talent that it was expecting. This is kind of a continuity move for me here, and I think it was the right one.
Jacob, like with this, they ended up having a search. Danny White kind of looked around, surveyed. As you said, though, like, so how, what do you think? What were the chances that it wasn't going to end with this result? Was this a search where there really was kind of a back and forth, or was it more of one like that there was a little bit more of, yes, we're going to look, but the reality is our answer is probably already sitting here?
No, this was a real search. And I think that caught a lot of people off guard. Tennessee really was intent on seeing who was interested in the position. Coastal Carolina's Kevin Schnall interviewed for the job, according to multiple sources. Tennessee had real interest in him. There's a link between athletic director Danny White and Schnall dating back to their days at Central Florida. There was a time in which it was believed that perhaps he would be the next head coach of the Volunteers. However, as time progressed, it became clear based on the desires of the players, the national media had a lot to say about this, the fans had a lot to say about this, that Josh Uihlander was the right and really the only choice to continue to lead this program if Tennessee wanted the best odds at being able to stay as good as they've been under Tony Vitello. So yes, it was a national search. However, I would say this, it became very clear almost immediately as soon as it became clear that Tony Vitello was leaving, that Josh Uihlander was the guy for this job.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to play point counterpoint. We've seen this recently. We saw this a year ago where Texas A&M is playing basically in the College World Series, National Championship Series, and news breaks that Jim Schlossnagel is leaving they promoted, and then A&M was, unfortunately for them, our preseason number one was the most disappointing team in the country, did not make the tournament this past year. Okay, that's one stretch of this. Why is this similar, or why is this different from that?
Well, to me, it's an entirely different situation. Texas A&M was in a position where, after the departure of Jim Schlossnagel, there was a real debacle when it came to keeping the roster together. It was the offseason. Texas A&M players had the opportunity to transfer if they wanted to. Its recruiting class was on the cusp of falling apart, and the only answer to keep all of those pieces together was to promote Michael Early from within. He had garnered a lot of respect from families both within and about to be within the program. And the only move for them, they were really handcuffed into promoting Michael Early. That's not to say, by the way, that Michael Early isn't a widely well-respected coach. He is. And I think that they were able to show that when they promoted him. You don't just get that job if you aren't a well-respected coach. However, in order to keep their roster together, he was a critical move for that team. Josh Elander is not the same thing. Tony Vitello's departure did technically open the transfer portal for Tennessee's players. However, because the academic calendar had already started, those players would not have been eligible to play in 2026 lest they were graduate transfers. So Tennessee technically had a stranglehold on its players to keep them in the house, even if they hired an external candidate. The reason Josh Elander was promoted was because, like I said, he was truly the best candidate for the job. They had an opportunity to go elsewhere and bring in really anybody considering the resources that that program has. They could buy out just about anybody. There was no such thing as a candidate that wouldn't necessarily want that job. It's a top job in the country. It's an easy access to championships right away. You have all the NIL that you could possibly ask for. But Josh Elander made the most sense for the stability of the program long term. He had the opportunity to keep a lot of these high talented recruits in the fold, and he is the guy who these players are most familiar with. So not really the same situation as Michael Early. There was less freedom for the players. This was less about immediate roster retention. This was more about the long-term future of the program, and we saw that proved when Tennessee issued a five-year contract worth $1 million annually to Elander.
Good stuff, Jacob. And you know, I'll finish just with what I enjoyed the most on this transition was Tony Vitello giving the Tennessee media the opportunity to chat before he talks to San Francisco, kind of close the book there and tell everyone how the job is really about babysitting Drew Gilbert. I mean, the dude just was a viral superstar in a month's time with his antics, showing everyone what he's going to do in Major League Baseball as far as revving up the engine. So anyway, I enjoyed that thoroughly when he wrapped up the press conference that way. Good stuff from both of you. As always, we'll have much more on this. Of course, Jacob will bring it all the time on baseballamerica.com with his college baseball coverage. And we'll see everyone next week on Hot Sheet.